You know, the podcast ended. We ran out of time today. We were talking about the chaos that is just coming from this in the next 12 months. You really, none of us have any idea what's going to be happening in 12 months from now.
Yeah.
A month after the election, what is America going to be like? And the only way I don't see it ending horribly is if it's not one of those two candidates that becomes president, and somehow or another it's legitimate. Which, I don't know.
Design the world, right?
All right.
Like, it's hard.
Design the world. Donald Trump, if he dropped dead of a heart attack from natural causes, no one would believe it, right?
No, it's
chaos.
No one would believe that.
Right. If he goes to jail, nobody will stand for that on the right. It's just total chaos. Mm. Joe Biden, he runs, but by September, he's a year down the road from where he is now. Okay? Mm. If he just degrades at the same speed that he's degraded over the last year, we all know how our parents go. When they start to go, they go fast. What happens if he's completely degraded by September or October of next year, and they hide him? Chaos. If he's out and it's clear, then people start to think of Kamala being the vice president. Chaos. They replace her because they figure, okay, we can't have her as the president. Chaos. She's a DEI appointment. Okay. So what are we going to do? If she becomes president, global chaos. Do you think China would be afraid of taking Taiwan under Kamala Harris?
No.
And with the story that we gave you in today's podcast about China, you'll hear it later. China absolutely would have the upper hand in that. And then if you buy at all that the CIA was somewhat involved in the Kennedy assassination, do you think it's beyond reason that they could kill any president at any time? I don't care what side it is. If the deep state says now's the time, they're weak. The whole thing is weak. Just take it.
You know, Glenn, this is going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Isn't it? It's going to be
a
fun year.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun year. And we have ringside seats, and so do you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're all in the ring together. Anyway, the podcast, great one today. You don't want to miss a second of it. Brought to you by Relief Factor. Used to live with horrible pain every day, and if you've done it, you know how much it drains all of the color out of the world. I tried everything I could to get it to go away. I couldn't find anything, nothing. Finally found out about Relief Factor, and it changed my world forever. I got my life back. If you've been dealing with anything like I was dealing with, and I bet yours is much worse, maybe today is the day you should give it a try. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that helps your body fight that pain. 100% drug-free, developed by doctors to reduce or eliminate pain and inflammation. Over 1 million people have tried it. Their quick starter kit, 70% of them order it again and again. See how they can help you. $19.95, and it comes with a Relief Factor feel better or your money back guarantee. So give it a try. ReliefFactor.com or call 800, the number 4-RELIEF. 800-4-RELIEF. ReliefFactor.com.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Welcome to the Glenn Beck program. We're glad you're here. Pat Gray joins us from Pat Gray Unleashed. And his company Keksi cookies, and you can get them at keksi.com, right?
Yes, yeah. KEKSI.com.
Yeah. So you know, Stu and I were talking about it because you have a new. Tanya and I are going to the store today to get them, then we're going to go door to door and give them to our neighbors, the ones we like.
And you like 1,000. Do you like about 1,000
like
of your neighbors?
I like one neighbor. No, so we're going to do that tonight. We took a walk in the neighborhood with all of the lights and everything else, and it's just you know, I said we just don't ever have time to go, you know, see people, and so we're gonna we're not gonna go carol. We're just gonna give them cookies. Here, have some cookies.
Do you take a motorized cart of some sort?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
I love that.
No, I got accused of having a motorized cart in my neighborhood, which I'm the only one that doesn't have a golf cart,
right?
You know, because I don't belong to the club.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I remember that.
I was rejected.
Remember that story? Mm. You were rejected. Yeah. Gosh, that was what money well spent by Pat and I to bribe them to be rejected.
Well, it was a good job. So I get this long, long letter that my wife or I are driving our golf cart and taking our dog for a run every morning, and we're a driving hazard. We're like,
what?
Don't you remember? We didn't join the club.
God,
we
that's insult to injury.
We don't have a golf cart.
This is rich person insult to injury.
No, it really is. It's such a such a
they
first
deny the club membership and then accuse you of having a golf cart.
Yeah,
it's like wow. They should build
struggling with that.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Didn't count your golf carts.
That's been a huge problem in Senegal right now.
Yeah. Oh,
same thing's going on there.
It was part of the Darfur conflict at the beginning too. I know.
Really, it's just. I am incredible. Because I own a piece of property behind the club and stuff.
Who
and
doesn't?
I have told my son, I am going to get the world's tallest car lot flagpole. And I am just going to hoist the Jolly Rogers flag, and you'll be able to see it for tens of miles, and there won't be anything they can do about it.
They will love it.
Anyway, people are moving because of people like me. I think from Washington State, they're fleeing the Pacific Northwest, California, and then Oregon and Washington. And they're going to Idaho. Now, normally, I don't like it when people move to California, to my state. And I know, people in Idaho are like, no Californians, please. However, the state is already one of the most conservative states in the union. 58% are GOP voters, but the people that are moving in, they're moving because of politics. And they're registering at 65% GOP. So they're more conservative than the people in Idaho. And I say, bring it on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's already a conservative state. Now, there's going to be no... Every Republican's going to lose 80-20 in Washington and California instead of 60-40, but who cares?
Yeah. 65% of the people moving in are registered Republicans. 12% are Democrats. That's remarkable.
We are sifting ourselves a little bit into...
yeah, we are.
Which, I don't know.
I don't... I'm okay
with it now.
Whatever. I feel like that's what I want to do, but it's really bad.
Is it, though?
Well, it's not bad for us, per se. It's bad for the country.
Is it, though? did the first one get on the air? Because I don't know. I mean, I feel... Like, look, it's okay to self-select at some level with people who generally see the world. I mean, I don't need someone who's going to agree with me on the exact tax cut policy that I want. But, who thinks men are men and women are women. It's hard to talk to people who can't grasp basic reality.
People are blaming conservatives for self-sorting, and they're saying, this is horrible. Well, you know what? This is where I'm torn. Now, it's really pretty horrible when you are living in a state that forces your children to learn that there is no right or wrong, male or female, and white people are bad. I mean, I wouldn't want to live in a state where they're teaching black people are bad or Asian people are bad. No race. What do you say about that? So you feel like you have no choice but to move. And I think it's bad for the country long term. But I tell you... I'm in Texas. I'm here for a reason. I didn't want to live in New York anymore.
Yeah. And I don't know. Was that a good choice or a bad choice? Do you like getting pelted by eggs on the way to work every day?
No, I really don't. But GOP also does not solve all the problems. I want to play something that a friend of mine found because he's Bulgarian. And so he watches news from, former Iron Curtain countries. He found something on their news in Ukraine, and it comes from 2016. It's Lindsey Graham and John McCain talking to Ukrainian soldiers that next year is the year for offense with Russia. Listen to this clip.
Your fight is our fight. 2017 will be the year of offense. All of us will go back to Washington and we will push the case against Russia. Enough of a Russian aggression. It is time for them to pay a heavier price.
2016.
Our fight is not with the Russian people, but with Putin. Our promise to you is to take your calls to Washington. Inform the American people of your bravery.
Проінформуємо американський народ про вашу відважність.
And make the case against Putin to the world.
Wow. Mm. Talk about a warmonger. That guy has never met a war he wasn't in love with.
But hang on just a second. Isn't it fascinating that you are standing there in 2016, right after the election, and you're speaking as though the war is going to begin the next year?
And it's already, the decision's already made.
Already made. We're going to go to war with Russia.
Well,
we're going to
make his case.
He's going to make the case. Well, yeah.
His decision's certainly made.
Sure.
Not the nation's.
Isn't it weird that after Donald Trump, we didn't really hear anything about Ukraine? We heard Russia, 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 but we didn't really hear anything about Ukraine. And then, as soon as Donald Trump is out, the first thing that happens is Ukraine.
Yeah, but caused by a Russian invasion, yes.
Was that Russian invasion not only wouldn't have happened with Donald Trump because of who Donald Trump was?
I think that's true.
But is it also because the Russians knew exactly what the warmongers were going to do under a Biden administration?
Maybe. I mean, who knows? It's possible. I will say, you know, this is 2016, so it is after Crimea. Like, this stuff had heated up quite a bit already, right? So there's some reason for them to be talking about this, but it's certainly...
But it's 2 years later.
Yeah.
It's 2 years after Crimea. Yeah.
And why is 2017? I'm convinced it's because they thought Hillary Clinton was going to get
win.
In. Then when she didn't, the train has already left the station. And we're just going to do it anyway. And they had no idea... That perhaps I'd love to play this clip for Donald Trump and get his point of view. Was there a movement to go in to Ukraine by the left and the right when you first got in? Because somebody in his administration would know if that was trying to be wielded against. But you know, that was, remember, one of the problems that they had was they said that Donald Trump was too pro-Russian. And I mean before there was a computer sending signals to his bank. No, there's not. That was complete fabrication. However, he was sending the message, we're not going to be hostile. We're not hostile. We just want to be friends with everybody.
Well, and that was our position, that we were not going to allow Ukraine into NATO. And that position went away. They just went back on that completely. So... and I thought it was kind of reasonable for Russia not to want Ukraine to be part of NATO.
And angry when we failed a promise, right? We broke a promise to them.
Yep.
I mean, that was part of the agreement back in the day.
It was.
So, I mean, there's been lots of problems on both sides of this for a very long time. But it does seem like there was an agenda kind of in place that people wanted to execute. And Trump certainly got in the way of that. I mean, that clip there is a great example of it. They 100% at that moment believed Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president of the United States.
December. So it was after the election.
Oh, it was December?
It was December.
Okay. That's my mistake. I'm sorry. Yeah. So that's interesting. Then they already knew.
Yeah.
Right. They thought that the train had already left the station. That the deep state, everything was happening. You know, the State Department, and they just didn't think that. I think that they thought it couldn't be stopped.
At that time, too, you remember the early versions of the Trump administration would have more affinity for that type of thing, right? They had a lot of generals in control.
Remember,
that was the early version of the Trump administration had maybe more likelihood to take that seriously.
And it
but it
also,
didn't work. I mean, he obviously, Trump did not go along with it, with McCain.
Right, but the deep state started pushing Russia, Russia, Russia.
Mm-hmm.
That Russia had interfered, Putin was behind it, that the presidential election had been hijacked by Russia. I mean, they immediately went and made Russia the bad guy.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not saying they're not the bad guy.
They are the bad guy.
They are the bad guy. But
yeah.
They immediately made that, they pinned all stuff that wasn't true on Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had it out for Russia. And it's amazing to me how, does it seem like anybody is actually representing you?
Not really.
Yeah.
Not really.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so people buy into conspiracy theories because you have to try to explain it.
Yeah.
Why is no one else standing up for America?
And how much have things changed since that presidential debate between Obama and Romney, where Obama told Romney that the 1980s called and they wanted their Russian policy back, that you shouldn't be considering Russia even an enemy at that point? It was Al-Qaeda that was the enemy, not Russia. Well, that's interesting how much that's changed over the last few years.
Well, I think the Russia thing came from the Clinton and Biden camp. I think they've been making money with Russia and Ukraine on the side, dirty money for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think this was part of their plan the whole time, quite honestly.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong. Pat, thank you so much. God bless.
No. Thank you.
No.
And I mean that.
Okay. You mean it. I will.
Okay.
You will. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Well, we have Justin Haskins on with us, who is from the Heartland. The Heartland, what is it? Foundation or Institute? Yeah. He belongs in an institute. Anyway, he's here to tell us about the poll that was done by Rasmussen that we spoke about yesterday. It is officially out today. It is the Heartland Rasmussen poll on voter fraud. And for the first time, a poll has been done and asked, did you cheat? Did you or somebody you know fill out a ballot that wasn't yours? Did you forge a name? And shockingly, there was about 8-10% of people on both sides that's claimed to be cheating in the 2020 election. Justin, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Glenn. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Great introduction, too. I really appreciate that. Radio Hall of Famer, everyone.
There you go.
Radio Hall of Famer.
You know, look, once you're in the Hall of Fame, they can't revoke it. So you kind of like coast. You're like, whatever.
I mean, O.J. Simpson is still in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Amen. Right?
Like, you can't really do anything to get out.
So be glad I didn't chop your head off.
Mm-hmm. I am. I really am. Thanks.
Okay. So tell me the ins and outs of this poll, because I have some questions. First, set the stage on the poll.
Right. So the poll is of 1,000 of voters, the vast majority of which voted in the 2020 election. And basically, we asked people, the Heartland Institute and Rasmussen Reports, we asked people about various fraudulent behaviors without actually telling them that it's a form of fraud. So we asked them, did someone else fill out a ballot for you using your name? Did you fill out someone else's ballot? Did you mail a ballot in a state that you're no longer a permanent resident in? Did you sign a ballot, forge a signature for someone else's ballot, with or without their permission? And honestly, I don't think I had this idea for a poll about a month ago, and I had numerous people telling me, do not do this poll. Do not ask it, because it's going to be a huge bust, and no one is going to admit that they committed fraud. Absolutely no one. My father, who's probably listening to the show right now, begged me, don't do this show. And as usual, Dad was wrong and I was right. And I'm glad that I did the poll, because you said in the lead up to this, it was somewhere between 8-10%, I think you said,
yeah,
Admitted to committing fraud. It's actually double that. it was between 17 and 21% of people who did mail-in ballots said yes to one of the questions that we asked. So these are people admitting this is at minimum
okay, so,
1 in 5 mail-in ballots fraudulent.
Okay, so hang on. I have sat down, at the kitchen, and not with voter stuff, but I've sat down in the kitchen and, you know, I'm filling out some paperwork and my wife is supposed to fill it out or whatever. And she'll be like, my hands are a mess. I just sign it. I don't want to sign it. Just sign it. I filled out forms for her. And I think a lot of people have, you know, been in a situation to where you're like, just sign it. Because it's your spouse and you're together. And you don't think you're committing fraud because there's no victim here. You know what I mean? How much of a role do you think that played with, like, older people that they're voting together at home and maybe the wife or the husband is filling out the ballot, you know, but they're sitting there together?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair point for at least some of the questions. This is why we didn't just ask only one kind of question. We also asked, you know, did you cast a ballot in a state where you're no longer a resident?
That's
it's kind of hard to explain that one.
Yeah.
You know, or did you, you know, and did you fill out someone's ballot is a little bit different than did you just sign it kind of at the end. So I think there's that as well. The really important thing I think for people to keep in mind, though, is that although that scenario is entirely possible, and I think a lot of people actually did experience it, and people might be thinking, well, you know, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is this. In previous elections, when you had to go vote in person, that would never happen.
Correct.
That couldn't happen. And so I think this survey explains why we saw so many additional votes. It was like 20 million additional votes or some crazy thing like that we had never seen before. Why did we see record number of votes? I think because there were a ton of people filling out ballots for other people in the House. I think that was the most common form of voter fraud. And so that's not on the same level maybe as stealing ballots from a ballot box or something like that, but it's still a form of fraud and it's still something that impacted the election.
Mm. So what's going to happen because of this poll? I mean, first of all, when you look at it, it's 22% Democrat, 21% Republican. But that's misleading because almost 2-1, if I'm not mistaken, Democrats are sending in ballots where Republicans are going in and voting on Election Day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we have enough data to know for sure who did this more often in terms of party affiliation or voting or for Biden or Trump or anything like that. I think the most we can say, though, very definitively, is that voter fraud was a major part of the election. It just was. And I don't know that we could tell who won the election based on this. If the survey is accurate, is reflective of reality, I don't know that we could tell who won. Because in a lot of these states, like in Georgia and places like that, I mean, the difference between Trump and Biden was a fraction of a percentage point. So if voter fraud was even close to what we're seeing in this poll, we don't know who won in that state. That's the truth. And so what we have to do going forward is make sure that if you're going to have mail-in balloting, which I don't think is a great idea, but if you're going to have it in your state, then widespread mail-in balloting, then make people go to a notary or someone who's an unbiased party official, have the state pay for the notary or whatever. Most government buildings have a notary anyway. Banks have notaries for their customers. That's usually for free. Go there and get the ballot notarized. If you require that, then most of this problem pretty much goes away overnight.
Oh my gosh, voter suppression.
Yeah.
Now you're expecting people of any color, pink, black, yellow, red, orange, purple, to know where they could find a notary? That's something only in a rich person's world. I see what you're doing.
Yeah, no, I that's what they're going to say.
Yes.
And my response to that would be, fine, then we'll send notaries to people's houses. We'll do whatever we have to do to get...
What we'll do. Here's what we'll do. Go on Election Day and vote.
Yeah.
Go on Election Day and vote. Make voting 3 days. Whatever. But go to the place where we all have to go. We all have to get the little flag, you know, sticker. I voted today. That's what you do.
Unless you have an excuse, right? Like, I mean, that's how it did with us. We used to work out of state on election day, obviously doing election coverage. It was impossible for us to get there on that day. So we had an outside ballot. We had one of those, what are they called?
Provisional ballots.
Provisional.
Absentee ballot.
Thank you so much, Justin. Hey, Justin, do you have anything that you can compare this to? Like, obviously, like, I'm wondering, is this a consistent number from election to election, or is this something that is odd in 2020?
Do we know? Because there's,
I thought I asked Justin. Was it Justin? I thought I said Justin. Hey, Justin, what's your answer to this? And then Glenn answered, so I don't know.
Well, Glenn and I share one mind, so really when you ask...
And it's my show!
Yeah. So the answer to Stu's fine question is that we do not have... This poll has never been done before. As far as I could tell, I tried to find something similar to it. This has never been done ever in history. I'm not sure that it would even necessarily matter if it had in some ways. Because during COVID... things changed so dramatically. Prior to COVID, there was hardly any mail-in balloting allowed anyway without an excuse. So I don't know that it would matter that much if we had something to compare.
It definitely expanded. However, there were states that were doing it, but not like this. Yeah.
Not like it's this. This could the most sway the one. National election now. The way we do it now, I mean, and honestly, The government should care. Here's why. Chaos ensues. Mm. If you don't believe the election results, then strongman tactics or chaos ensues. You know, why did January 6th happen? Well, because there were a lot of people that didn't believe that those were accurate results. Well, that's because Donald Trump. No, it's because we had unprecedented changes. And also, for the first time in my life, with an exception of the year 2000, all of a sudden, we don't know the answer. And even in the year 2000, they didn't shut down counting. There were just too many things that were irregular. And the government has lied and lied and lied about so many different things. It's a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy theory. He's got a bank in Moscow that's contacting him at Trump Tower. Wait, what? They're pushing conspiracy theories while saying real things are conspiracy theory. If they don't clean this up, and they know this, they are responsible for any kind of unrest, because it's easy to take care of, especially in today's world. It's called blockchain. Really simple.
Yeah, I mean, I think the scale of this, too, is so absolutely massive. It's hard to imagine that this didn't... You're a completely reasonable person for believing that voter fraud impacted the election based on this survey and a whole bunch of other things that happened. But to just give people some perspective on the numbers, there were 159 million ballots cast. 159 million, that's all ballots. 68 million of those ballots were cast mail-in ballots. It was by far the biggest mail-in ballot election in 2020 ever. If this survey is reflective of what actually happened, and 1 in 5 mail-in ballots are potentially fraudulent or should have been thrown out, shouldn't have been accepted, that would be 13 million ballots. 13 million ballots. And so this has to be cleaned up, or we don't have a country. We don't have a country anymore, because you're exactly right. No one will trust the election.
So here's the latest. The D.C. board has removed now 65,000 ineligible registrations and will remove 38,000 more in California and Illinois contacted by Judicial Watch. So Judicial Watch sent notice letters to the election officials in D.C., California, Illinois, saying you're violating the National Voter Registration Act. There are people that have moved out of the state that are long dead, didn't exist, whatever, should not be voting, and you're leaving them on the rolls. I mean, it really is crazy to me that it only seems like the right is doing anything about this. Well, of course, they think they're going to lose. Well, we're losing our republic. Shouldn't we all care about this? Shouldn't we care? I mean, the poll comes out, and it's, you can't really explain it this way because of the numbers of people that were participating, but just looking at it at the surface, 21%, 22%, Republican, Democrat. We should all care about this. The minute we stop caring about every single vote that is cast is the day the republic is no more. And I don't know. Maybe we're there. Maybe we're already past it. I'm not. I wish someone would lead the charge to clean this up.
Yeah, that's a great point. And when you look at election laws that have been passed, actually, a lot of red states are terrible in this regard.
Terrible.
And some deep blue states are actually better than red states. I mean, I was looking at state-by-state laws on mail-in balloting. In Rhode Island, which is as blue of a state as you will ever find, been dominated by the Democrat Party for a century, they require two witnesses or a notary for a person to cast a mail-in ballot. They have to have two witnesses or a notary. Most red states don't even require any witness at all. Some of them don't even do signature verification for mail-in ballots. Like Kansas doesn't even do a signature verification.
You're listening to the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
So there is a new op-ed now that came out with the Daily Caller, and I have to read it to you. It's amazing. It's from Will Pierce. Listen to what he says. I've been a loyal Democrat for as long as I can remember.
Oh, it's one of these fake Democrats.
Keep listening. I spearheaded Joe Biden's exploratory effort in 2015. I served as a senior advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders during the 2016 and 2020 elections. I even played a role as a fundraiser for Biden during the 2020 general election. But despite my active involvement in the Democratic Party, the concerns I hold regarding the party's direction in recent years can no longer be ignored. I love our country. That is why I can no longer remain in today's Democratic Party, a party that is focused on dividing us by radicalizing every issue and undermining our rights enshrined in the Constitution. The main reason I'm leaving the Democratic Party is its utter disconnect with the American people. The party that once championed the working class has now been overtaken by elites in affluent hubs who couldn't care less about the struggles of the average American. This shift has left many Americans, including myself, unheard and feeling like an afterthought of the Democratic Party. The party's shortcomings in education have played a significant role in my departure as well. They have declared war on concerned parents like myself, labeling them domestic terrorists, or for expressing their opposition to radical curricula that disseminates sexual content to young children. The party's emphasis on progressive ideology in schools at the expense of parental involvement and a robust STEM education raises legitimate concerns about the future preparedness of our children. It is time to shift our focus back to the fundamentals that ensure our children's success, thereby building a foundation for a more prosperous society. I would love to talk to this guy because I can't imagine that we agree on, but so far I agree with everything.
He worked for Bernie Sanders.
Right.
But I mean, it's interesting. This isn't a, hey, Joe Biden's too old, we need a better candidate.
This is full-fledged. What we've been saying.
Yeah.
I think the strongest line so far is, I love our country. Also, the Democratic Party's shift towards identity politics has steered us away from the timeless belief of judging individuals by their character and not by the color of their skin or similar characteristics. The weaponization of race and gender ideology for partisan political purposes does a significant disservice to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy, and it's a detriment to us all. Amen. Politics to me is about addition, not division. It is meant to unite us as a nation where we can put aside our differences on some issues to come together on as one cohesive unit. However, the Democrats' tendency to label dissenters as extreme, shutting down meaningful discourse, has veered away from the principles I believe are essential for a thriving democracy. In the years as part of the Democratic Party, I witnessed a hesitancy and, at points, clear unwillingness to address critical issues for fear of alienating segments of the party. I'm looking at the Democratic Party's vision for an ideal world, and it is a very concerning reality that emerges. They imagine a country where dissent from the powers that be result in punishment. This guy, I mean, he was part of Biden, he was part of Bernie Sanders, and now he is finally to a place to where he realizes they imagine a country where dissent from the powers that be result in punishment. That is fascism. The term equity has lost its true meaning as the party struggles to understand its use in a diverse nation. What was once a noble pursuit of justice and fairness has been corrupted within Democratic circles, diluting its significance to the point to where it has lost any meaning. The party's attempts to champion equity now seem to prioritize ideological conformity over the genuine pursuits of justice, leaving a void in the very principles that should guide our efforts toward a more inclusive and just society. As I've grown older, my priorities have shifted toward ensuring that my tax dollars contribute to the welfare of our children, support for the less fortunate, and secure national defense. Unfortunately, the Democratic Party's current focus involves burdensome taxation, prioritizing foreign aid over domestic needs, and accumulating debt that compromises our national security. The Democratic Party's leadership also raises concern. President Biden's struggles while doing the job day to day, coupled with controversy surrounding his family, have brought forward serious issues that warrant our careful consideration. The heavy-handed influence of the Clinton dynasty within the Democratic Party further adds to the narrative of a party entangled in controversies and detached from the concerns of everyday Americans. Democratic policies paint a bleak picture of a country where a significant portion of people's hard-earned wages are funneled into an ever-expanding government, leaving individuals working tirelessly just to make ends meet. Take, for instance, San Francisco and Chicago, where tax dollars are diverted from aiding the most vulnerable to instead masking their struggles from public view. In this unsettling scenario, the elites indulge in the luxury of private jets and utilize taxpayer funds for personal gain. They are far more concerned with consolidating power than with genuinely addressing the needs and concerns of the American people. The difference between stated values and actual behavior undermines the trust that citizens should be able to place in their government. As I reflect on these issues, I'm compelled to seek a political home that aligns with a commitment to judging individuals by their character, fostering accountability, and advancing the well-being of all Americans. By joining the Republican Party, I am not abandoning my values. Instead, I'm seeking a political home that aligns more closely with my vision for a free, united, and prosperous America. The Republican Party, with its emphasis on individual freedoms, fiscal responsibility, and a commitment to addressing the concerns of all Americans, offers a new path forward, one that I am eager to explore as I re-enter the political arena. That is fascinating. He's wrong about the Republican Party, but I mean, fiscal responsibility? Uh-huh. Right.
In comparison, maybe.
But in comparison. Yeah. In comparison, perhaps. Perhaps. That is, I think, incredible.
Mm. Can you ever see yourself having that type of moment?
Yes. I think we already have. I've gone from not a Republican because I just don't like labels to not a Republican because I don't like the Republicans. I mean, I vote generally Republican, but I'll never give them a dime ever again. If I had a choice to get out and have another, if another party started that was serious, like Libertarian Party, it feels like they're never really serious about winning. If I had another choice, that's why I'm independent. I think that's why a vast, vast number of former Republicans and Democrats are now going independent because they don't feel either party is really representing them.
Yeah, his transition there is interesting because he's saying, I haven't changed my principles. But, like, you know, talking about some of these things.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how can you be with a Bernie Sanders advisor and care about fiscal responsibility? Like, I mean, come on. How
did you not get that? That's why I'd love to talk to him.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious as to whether it was one of those things where he's realizing he was wrong, because he's saying I'm still the same guy, basically.
But he did say on fiscal responsibility, as I have gotten older.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like if you're not a liberal when you're, you know, 20, you don't have a heart. If you're not conservative by the time you're 50, you don't have a brain.
Mm.
In the famous words of Churchill.
Yeah, that's interesting. So this would be a really fascinating guy to talk to.
I would love to talk to this guy.
Well, how does that transition happen, Glenn? Because if you have a moment like that where you're going, I mean, this is a big life change, right?
He's the most hated man on the left for a while.
You're saying what's the result of this happening?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. But like, I'm saying in a quiet moment, right? Like you're at your house. And one day you're looking at your life and you're saying, God, I've spent my entire life trying to get people like Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden elected. And I think they're wrong. Like, I think I've spent my life working for something that is actually hurting the country. What kind of moment is that in a person's life?
I again think we've had that. We had that with the Patriot Act. We had that smaller ones, but it was led to the same thing. Try this.
Okay.
I have always been red, white, and blue. I bleed red, white, and blue. I bleed the United States of America. I have always believed that we were the good guys. I don't think so anymore.
That we're the good guys.
Yeah. I think the intent of most of our soldiers, mm-hmm. the intent of most of the people in America is different than the intent of those at the CIA, NSA, now FBI. It's just different from the people mm-hmm. in Washington, the higher ups in Washington. I think they are on the wrong side. They are no longer on the side of the American people. So I have a really hard time. You know, what's weird is I've had an easier time to say the Pledge of Allegiance. I used to have a problem. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Right. It's always bothered me. The flag, only because it's a Woodrow Wilson FDR thing. It's a symbol, but I have concentrated on and the republic for which it stands.
Right.
And that has become more and more important to me. The republic. I fly the flag differently. I used to fly the flag as a sign, yeah, I love America. Now I almost fly it mentally in defense of the republic as almost a symbol of rebellion in my life.
Hmm.
I believe in the republic for which that stands, where I never would have thought that way. Never. I always gave people, you know, 25 years ago, I gave everybody the benefit of the doubt. Oh, we all kind of think alike. That was hard. That was really hard when I at least woke up and went, I think they're working against us. I think, I don't even know how long this has gone on. I think we've been conned for a very long time. Those principles that we all thought we had. No, the elites don't have those principles. Na, 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 na.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.